This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes, the beautiful tones of Hugh's trumpet. Masagela and Chilesh. We will not see his like again. Such beautiful stuff. Like, you could listen to this any time of the day, you'll feel better. Oh, this is interesting. R in Cape Town has just sent me this. The looming day zero has brought the neighbors in my street together. Society in Cape Town will have to stand together and help each other. In challenging times, resilience makes us smarter and stronger. Cape Town will be a major source of knowledge and innovation within 5 years from now. Watch this space. Well, I think you're probably right, because as Gord already said, this is the first time that a major city has had to deal with this scale of drought and water restriction and water problems. But the world is going to have to deal with this sooner or later. You know, everybody talks about how the great asset in the future is going to be water. If you own land with a dam on it, you'll be richer than someone who has $1 billion in the bank, because water will become such a precious resource. But there are ways for us to figure this out now.
Graphene, desalination.
In advance, yeah, exactly. And we've got to start building these plants. I mean, we've got the sea. Yeah, there's a water cycle. So that all the water on Earth is the same as all the water that was on Earth 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 1,000,000 years ago.
Sure.
It's a cycle. And you remember learning about this geography in primary school. There's a water cycle. So the problem is we can't keep putting dirty water back into the system, because it takes a while for it to clean. It has to filter through the ground. It has to go down the rivers. It has to be cleaned out by the sea. But ultimately, we can figure our way around this, and we have to find ways of renewing and reusing water and purifying the water that we've made filthy.
Yeah. I mean, I read Bill Nye's books, Unstoppable and Undeniable. Mm-hmm. Undeniable was the first one. It was about how evolution can't be debated anymore. And Unstoppable was about how the technology that we have already, some sort of upcoming technology that's in the prototypical stages, and some stuff that's already there, can literally solve clean energy and clean water. And actually, right. Like, we can stop... We could, if we really put our minds to it, stop polluting, have no more plastic problems. There's technology and ideas out there already to fix everything. And one of them that he talked about was graphene, which is a type of substance, a carbon-based substance, where basically carbon atoms are arranged in a hexagonal grid. And what it really
nanotubes.
What it really is super fancy graphite, which is super fancy coal. I don't want to get the science wrong, but there's a way to run a current through it and run water through it, so that the sediment and the water comes out pure on the other side, and the sediment doesn't damage the system. It's non-corrosive, and with enough of this stuff, if you make a big enough piece of it, you can desalinate water at will. The problem is, it, like lithium ion, which is now completely ubiquitous in our cell phones and stuff, when it was first kind of invented or whatever, was just incomprehensibly expensive.
Yeah.
Now, because a retail consumer product needs this lithium ion, it's in every battery everywhere, and it costs virtually nothing. If we found a reason to mass manufacture this stuff, it would be cheap. The reason it's not cheap is because we don't make it. The reason we don't make it is because it's not cheap. But these kind of technologies exist. If we go, okay, screw the bottom line, let's build free water. But they're doing nuclear fusion, dude. Like, the British have just announced that they've had the best, the longest stable plasma reaction inside their nuclear fusion machine. They aim to be running on free nuclear fusion energy by 2030. Fantastic. The Germans have got one as well, which has reached new stages of stability. I follow a couple of, like, science sites and whatever. And
sounds like it.
Yeah, but do they?
You lost Sia about 3 minutes ago.
Basically, like, a little bit of hope is in the fact that, like Gareth says, we need to get our shit together as a species and start figuring out how to actually solve these solvable problems. And the solutions are there. They're just kind of not quite, ready to install.
I agree with you.
And press
it's a question of scale, and it's a question of
will.
Political will more than anything else, because the reins of the economy are either held in political hands, which means that permission needs to be given for things to be undertaken, or you've got to hand it over to the public sector and let people compete for profit to solve the problems. Someone says here, I was listening to you guys yesterday about the contraceptive app Mm-hmm. Mubs and Ben and Sia. Friends of mine used a similar method of contraception, only having unprotected sex when it was safe to. It was based on the woman's monthly cycle. She did not fall pregnant for 5 years. Then when they wanted kids, they stopped following the method and she fell pregnant pretty quickly. So it can work, Don.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it can and then it can't. Well, that app, like 37 women went in for abortions because the app told them it was safe to have sex when it wasn't.
Did another one go yesterday?
It can work and then also it cannot work. That's the problem. Is it's just not foolproof.
None of that stuff's foolproof, though.
Yeah, and that's the point.
One of my very good friends who has always kind of not wanted to have kids as a kind of decision that she was quite comfortable with, has always been on the pill. She's on contraception, and she's pregnant, and everything's going well so far. And obviously, like, now she's very stoked about it, but her plan was never have kids. And she's always been on the pill, and then she got pregnant. And so none of these things are 100%. Condoms aren't 100%. But if these dudes are having a terrible batting average like that, then I can imagine maybe think a little bit more scientifically.
Alrighty, some news stories that we've got to pay attention to this morning. Mubs, what's on your agenda?
Well, Ben suggested that cannibal in Port St. John's have a ditch dug up for him. Well, make a bigger ditch, because there is a German nurse who has been nicknamed the Angel of Death.
Uh-oh.
After he was found guilty of killing two people...
It's a male nurse?
Yes. Oh. After being found guilty of killing two people, evidence has emerged that he is now responsible for 97 more victims.
What? You don't notice that in this one hospital where the dude works?
It was actually two hospitals, Gord.
Yes, like...
Niels Hogel is already serving a life sentence for two murders and two attempted murders. Now prosecutors are saying he killed 97 more over several years
at two
different hospitals.
I was going to say, how do you not notice? But then I mulled it over in my brain for a second, and I'm like, people die in hospitals. It's actually the perfect place to go and do some murder
if
stuff.
You want to do a spot of murder, yeah, you go in there.
Go and work in a hospital.
Look, it doesn't
be
look
responsible
great
for taking care of people who might not make it.
It doesn't look great in your CV. You know, it's like, oh, you've been in mercy hospitals. There's been a lot of deaths there recently.
Yeah.
The two hospitals in question are one in Oldenburg, where Hogel worked from 1999 to 2002, and then he worked at a clinic in Delmenhorst from 2003 to 2005. During his trial, which began in 2015, Hogel said he had intentionally caused cardiac crisis in around 90 patients, because he enjoyed the feeling of resuscitating them.
I made a mistake, and I apologize for it.
But, like, if you're looking for people to resuscitate because you think resuscitation is fun, surely you get enough of that at a hospital.
Well, he wasn't getting enough of it, Gord, because he was the one causing.
Wow.
He was the one causing the cardiac arrest.
What a nutcase.
Sure, but there should be some people who are of their own accord. There should be a sufficient supply of cardiac issues at a hospital that you don't need to go and create.
That's what
more
I don't
problems.
Understand, right? I don't understand this. So, the guy, he doesn't work alone. You don't do this stuff alone in a hospital. You're going from bed to bed. There are other nurses who will check on things.
Yeah, but you get your
the
moments,
doctors.
Dude. You get your moments.
So, in other words, he would wait for a moment when he was on his own with a patient and then initiate cardiac arrest.
And nobody puts two and two together and goes, shit, we've had an uptake in cardiac arrest.
Wow.
An upswing in cardiac arrest, and they tend to happen whenever that dude's on his shift.
Yeah, well, as a result of his confessions, investigators carried out toxicological exams on dozens of his patients who had died at the hospitals. And the results of these exams have led to the new charges being brought forward. So aside from the fact that, you know, he had caused cardiac crisis in around 90 patients, he then later told investigators he had also killed.
Killed.
That's
killed.
Different than cardiac resuscitation sport, and sometimes it doesn't work out.
So he did both.
This was just like, screw you, dude.
There's an episode of Black Mirror where this guy gets this chip in his head to make him feel what patients feel, so he knows exactly what to diagnose and how to treat. And it goes badly, and he gets addicted to pain and these kind of things. So he becomes addicted to patients who are, like, about to die, basically.
Jesus,
because
horrible.
He's connected mentally with them.
Hey, guess who's here?
Cristiano Ronaldo.
No.
No better. Mugfish.
Better.
The East Rand ambassador.
That's right. Amanda's popped in to catch up with us this morning. How are you, Amanda?
Good and you. Hey, guys.
It's nice to see you. How was your holiday?
Just average.
What did you do? Anything fun? Anything you want to report?
I caught a fish, guys. I went fishing.
Oh, okay.
How many eyes?
So, as I said, anything you want to report? Is that the most exciting
That's
thing?
The most
Where did
exciting?
You go?
To like this dam in Benoni. It's
That's not a holiday. That's
oh, we're not on holiday. No, nowhere.
In some cases, that's punishment for shoplifting. That
was the most exciting part of my holiday. Like,
you steal from certain panel beaters. They put concrete shoes on you and throw you in the dam.
They just make you stay there. Like, okay.
Is that the dam that was poisoned with airplane fuel?
Yeah, that's why I asked. How many eyes do the fish have?
Oh, God, is that what happened?
Is it supposed to have eyes?
Did you eat this thing?
No, so what happened is, like...
Was it a barbel?
I don't even know what it was, but it was a fish.
She already told you it was a fish. It wasn't
It was
a
just
gym.
Great. So
Here,
first,
I'm going home. That was the worst joke
I caught a person,
ever.
Like my first throwing in thing. I hooked my sister-in-law's brother. It was a mistake. And then...
Oh, on the bank of the dam.
Yeah.
No, your cousin-in-law, you mean.
Right, your cousin-in-law.
Okay, jeez. And then I caught a little duck. It got stuck to the foot. It was a mistake.
Oh, Jesus, Amanda. You're a hazard.
Yeah.
So you went and tortured a couple of animals. You pulled a fish out just to watch it suffer and beg for its life in fish language.
What kind of fish was
Strug
it? You don't know?
A couple of
it
ducks.
It was pretty attacked big, guys.
Attacked a human
with a hook. I don't know what it was.
An all-round menace, really. Yeah.
No, it was amazing. That was the, like... most exciting part, I think.
East Rand fishing. We're going to guide.
And it was like proper East
things.
Rand. It was like Benoni Homestead Dam. People
Jeez.
Are like camping on the dam.
But don't you just
Amanda
draw.
Romberg, eco warrior. She's destroying the ecosystem of what little ecosystem remains in the East Rand.
Give me a hook and I will mud everything.
Oh, no.
Did you not just jawl? Surely at your age, being on holiday, no work, no studies, you just go and be drunk for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, there was a bit of that gin-tastic 2 weeks. It was just gin, non-stop gin. But then I went, like, the only jawl I did was New Year's, and it was terrible anyway.
What did you do for New Year?
Went to H2O.
Oh.
Hey, my God, I was not ripped enough. I was going to go, but I didn't make my training deadlines.
It was
Unfortunately,
terrible.
My body fat
Why
was
it terrible?
Figures,
what happened?
So I didn't go.
Just it was so full, and, like, people were going crazy.
I liked it when it was underground.
Lots of drugs?
Oh, loads. Lots of luck.
I bet.
And, like, you go to the bathroom, and if you take more than 10 seconds, the cleaner's like, if you're not out of here, I'm calling the medics. Like, there was just no
Well, Amanda, fair enough. I mean, when in Rome.
Give us a bit of time.
When in Rome.
Wow. You need a minute, right?
It's like 10 seconds.
You know you go into a rough jaw where it's more than 10 seconds, the cleaners call the medics.
No.
You know what they must have seen to have that sort of mindset?
Gareth just blew his nose, and I've become utterly paranoid about blowing my nose ever since you pointed out that it's your pet hate when people do it in restaurants and that it's a socially unacceptable thing to do.
It's gross.
Never occurred to me in my life, and now, like, every time I blow my nose, I try to find, like, go to the bathroom and try to find, like, a really quiet corner and as quietly as possible.
All right, so someone says here, Dear Team and Gord, funny how it's the in thing to pay for various items with Bitcoin. In Cape Town, they'll soon start trading with water. That's from the Oracle. Whatever happened to the dead body found in the ceiling in that hospital, the story that you covered last year?
Yeah.
Do we know anything more, Vanessa?
That's a cold case, huh?
I see what you did there,
the
Ben.
The body in the ceiling.
Oh, we're still reeling.
Yeah, Vanessa, we are looking to
in the ceiling.
We are looking to wrap up a couple of those stories. I mean, he is one of them.
The
spear murder.
Yeah, Henry what's happening
Bredar.
With Henry von Bredar?
They went on summer break. They went on summer break.
Yeah, I mean, they went on breaks, and then they'll go back for sentencing, won't they?
Gareth, I saw him in Stellenbosch.
All good shows, they go on summer breaks. The writers have got to stop. The actors need a break.
Okay. Hey, welcome, Amanda. I'm rethinking the aquarium visit, Michelle. Michelle says don't visit the aquarium in Cape Town. Obviously, they don't have water for starters.
But don't they just use seawater there? Don't they pump it in from the ocean?
Yeah.
So they should.
But she says don't visit anyway after you're fishing. She doesn't want you.
Yeah, Amanda will rock up there with a sneaky hook in her pocket, yeah,
with a paintball gun, and just start taking to the penguin.
Like
a
spark plug. Like, with fishing, I thought you just put like bread on the hook, and that was it. Like there were worms, and so it was a big day to touch worms, and like it was crazy.
Fish in their natural environment do like to bake.
Yeah, they're not really gluten.
Confectionery.
They're mostly gluten free.
Yeah,
contaminated barbel.
This is a pink tipped baker fish. That's a look at that. It's a hook lipped croissanta. We've got
croissanta.
All of the different species.
Look, it's a low GI Stenbrus.
Amanda, we're busy doing this thing about people who look like their pets. You've got a pet, right?
Yeah, I do. They're a bit out of control, but yeah.
What pets do you have?
2 German shepherds, but every time I try and feed them, they try and eat me, so I try and avoid them.
Do you think they're racists?
Well, no.
I know that there are dogs. Like, some people have a serious issue with their dogs because their dogs are racist.
Well, yeah. They really like the lady that works in my house, Madonna. They love her.
Yeah.
But they don't like me.
So. Tuli Madoncella works in your house?
Madonna.
Oh, Madonna. I thought you said Madonna.
Her name's Prima Donna.
My BFF, Kulani, had a dog. It's passed away now. I think they ultimately put it down because it was completely mad. But it fully hated white people.
Yeah.
And like, it was almost like a Pomeranian, but like bigger. So it wasn't the kind of dog that would normally be scary. But I'll never forget. Like, I would say to him, dude, I'm coming over, but you must have the dog put away before I get there. Don't let me sit in my car terrified while you wrangle the dog, because it would jump with its face into the window. Like, it would, you just saw this dog. And it's like, until there was like a little bit of that smeared blood, like on the window.
Oh my
dog,
God.
The dog would hurt
insane,
itself.
Right?
And it was complete, like, it was complete dog psychosis. It would literally one day it cut itself jumping into the window. And I was like, dude, your dog's bleeding on the window. Like, yeah, so Jam didn't last forever, thankfully. But this dog was, and Kulani assured me, because I'd never seen it with my own eyes, but he assured me that Jam was like peace-loving Buddhist dog. Whenever
owners always say that,
if white people weren't around,
you know, the Queen's corgis actually bite her sometimes. Mm-hmm. They're the most vicious little shits.
They're not nice dogs.
No. My sister's got a corgi. It's and when she collected her corgi from the woman who she bought it, she bought it from a breeder. This woman had 3 of her fingers missing.
No way.
Yes.
How can a corgi do your finger?
I'm telling you.
That's from not going to the doctor when you get a small nip.
She
breeds corgis, and this woman had 3 fingers missing. And my sister said, I don't know if I've made the right decision here about this corgi puppy. Look, she hasn't bitten anyone, luckily,
yes.
But she's a vicious little shit. And the Queen's ones apparently killed, like, Prince Charles's dog or something.
Yeah.
They are vicious little things.
Yeah, they say there's no bad dogs, there's only bad owners, though.
Well, so then the Queen's a bad owner.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, I mean, I can't comment on her on how she treats them, but I'm pretty sure those dogs have no excuse. I mean, they've literally had every privilege.
Yeah, sure, guys, but I don't think we should be blaming the Queen. I reckon Philip goes in there and starts asking them to fight for money, and he brings his boys around from the Thursday Club, and they start poking them in the nuts and going, yeah, fight him. And the Queen's like, hello.
Making the servants fight the corgis. Like, okay, we'll tie the one hand behind the back, and then you have a small stick, and then there's 5 corgis, but we're going to paint you with meat. And do like...
You with me.
Do some sort
That's
of
exactly
sport,
what Philip's doing.
Sport
Philip's,
fighting.
And Philip's rolling dice, saying if this is under 8, you get eaten by the corgis.
But yeah, because that dude is probably nuts. Like, secretly feeding them human flesh as treats.
Hey, listen, here's an email from Robin. It says, while I was making coffee, that conversation about the EFF and H&M looting came up. I think when the abusive daddy that we're all so sick of is sent to pasture, I think he means the president, both these parties are going to have a very hard time staying relevant, the DA and the EFF. That said, the EFF need to criminally be charged with what they did at H&M and pay back the money for their vandalism. But I sadly doubt that H&M is already on the back foot and will charge them. I'm keenly looking forward to the Mac Daddy of political analysis. Every week, Justice Malala. And remember, Justice has moved to a Monday. So if you're expecting him tomorrow, he's not here on Thursday. He's here on Monday. You can listen to that podcast. Here's something for someone who's... written to us. I think this is Oki in Darwin, Australia. He says, hey, is it possible these days to be bored if you have a smartphone?
The smartphone ironically makes you bored. I've noticed, I'm trying quite hard to like use less of it. I don't think I have like a pathological problem. If I've got something I need to focus my attention on, like work or something that's happening, I'm not like incapable of not looking at my phone. But I notice like if I'm watching TV series, I'll like pick up my phone sort of subconsciously and check if what my notifications are. And then I'm like, oh shit, I've missed like 5 minutes of this TV show. I need to go back. Like I then put the phone out of reach and it no longer is an issue. But like, I was hanging out with some of my friends and everybody was constantly checking their phones. And I was like, you know, we get together so we can all look at our phones together. And you mentioned once that, you know, in the modern age that we're in now, you can't begrudge people checking their phones, and people are going to look at their phones during dinner, and it's just where we are as a society. But like, it's actually more fun to engage with the thing that isn't your phone.
Yeah.
Like, there's seldom anything, especially on Facebook, where this like horrible sort of loop of stuff you already know and already think, and people who agree with you telling you you're right with their crap content and crap posts. But there's seldom anything so fascinating or interesting on social media that it's really worth it. Like, I occasionally come across an amazing article which I love to read, or someone will post one out of every 1,000 people you're friends with on Facebook is actually witty or interesting, and they'll post something and go, that's great. But like, it's very seldom really entertaining to take an hour for social media.
No, well, the point is that Oki's saying here, catching up with friends and family on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and WhatsApp are enough to keep you busy for hours every day. If you have a bit more time, you can binge watch Netflix, Amazon Prime Video, and Stan. I'm 55 now, and there's not enough hours in my lifetime to watch all the things I'd like to watch on Netflix.
TV series is another story. I will also never catch up all the TV series that I'd like to catch up.
And he says, then there's YouTube. Once you start with that, you normally end up on a totally different topic than the one you started out with.
Oki's discovered the internet. And he's writing you guys a letter.
He says, then there are podcasts. It is possible to read just about any newspaper in the world online. You can listen to any radio station in the world online.
Fascinating.
Then there's catch-up TV to watch all the programs you've missed.
You're kidding.
Yeah, he says, then there are audiobooks.
What?
Online shopping, gambling, gaming, it's all possible.
Tell
Video
me
games.
About this audiobook game.
I know. So these days it's even boring to wait in a long queue. It's not even boring, he says, because you can catch up on Facebook while you're waiting.
What kind of devices do we access this miracle entertainment fountain of endless joy?
I think he makes an interesting point, because where do people find time to raise their kids these days with all of this going on?
They give them a smartphone.
Give them one of those iPads wrapped in crash protection, like plastic. I don't know if you've seen.
Do you get bored? When last were you bored? Did you sit in your house or at your office and you go, I'm bored?
Ironically, like if I have a moment at the office where I'm bored, I'll put on social media and kind of stare at it with my mouth slightly drooling and sort of engage boredom mode via those channels. Like, when I'm not bored. So, I do agree with, it's Oki, right? I do agree with him that there is fascinating stuff upon the interpipe. But like, for the most part, we kind of just stare at it gaping mouthed and entranced. That's my assessment. I think better content, less channels, or rather less individual sources, better content from fewer people and places. We need to, like, I work hard at streamlining my feed. I try to make sure
you've got to cut out the crap.
I unfollow people who aren't interesting. Yeah. You might also have friends who are fantastic in real life or that you've known for a long time, but what they want to talk about online versus what they'll talk to you about in real life, they just want to rant like ignorant political shit all the time. But they'll chat to you. They'll be a normal, fun, nice people when you actually see them. So you just unfollow them.
Amanda, do you get bored?
No, I don't think I've ever had the chance to be bored, actually.
Even if, like last night, I couldn't sleep properly at all. So I lay in bed and I thought, I'm not going to use my phone because then I won't be able to get back to sleep again.
Also, the screen's bad for that.
That's right. So I picked up a bunch of books, turned on the light, and started reading books. Problem with that is that I wasn't, because of my sinus situation at the moment, I wasn't getting back to sleep anyway. And then you get stuck in the book and you're like, I really should try to get to sleep, but I actually not tired, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And then it's this horrible, like, cycle you get trapped in.
It depends how you define bored. Like, if you look at bored as going, okay, well, I'm understimulated, I'd love to be doing something, and I just can't for the life of me think of or access anything fun to do. Like, I'm locked in my bedroom, and I'd rather be out doing something cool. Like, having nothing to do versus being in a state where you're just completely kind of semi-vegetative, and you're like, So what I'm trying to say is that when I'm bored, usually I'm quite thrilled to be bored.
Yeah,
I'm like, thank God,
you've got
sitting on my arse.
You see, this is the point.
You
actually have to set aside time for you to be
bored.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I'm very thirsty, but I just don't have the energy to get up and go get water because I'm so on my arse. Like, does that, I'm so deeply on my arse. Does that count as bored? Because love that time.
That's how most people watch television. They just couldn't be bothered to actually get up and do anything, and then the TV's on, so they just end up watching.
Yeah. Well, there's
and whatever's
really,
on is what they watch.
There's this really great guy on YouTube. His name is Rich Mulholland, and he makes these videos called Get Rich Quick.
Yeah.
And his latest video is about using your downtime productively. So rather than just sitting there like you're like a couple of chromosomes short and you just don't know what to do with your life, it's how you use that downtime to become smarter and better at certain things.
Yeah.
Because we all believe, oh, our lives are so hectic because we all got a little bit of victim in us. I must just stare at the Kardashians or, I don't know, just stare at Instagram. But you can use downtime to actually take in stuff. And because you're not having the pressure of work, you'll actually enjoy like an audiobook or a tutorial about something you care about. And suddenly, we're not just being vegetables. We're actually taking time out.
All right. When did you last learn something online?
Yeah, I do. Yesterday. I'm guilty
every
of
day.
That. Yeah.
I watch. I mean, YouTube. I watch endlessly for tutorials, how to make better videos. It's just so. It's endlessly interesting.
How about you, Mubs?
Fuck.
No, the thing is, like,
you don't want to learn stuff.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to think what's the last thing I learned.
Okay, hang a second. Hang a second. Why do you think about that? I just believe, and I agree with this from Rich's video, is that we are so conditioned to have, oh, I've got to have time off. I've got to stop. I've got to switch off. Mm. But, like, why do you ever want to switch off? Like, if you think about it, why would you go, I'm doing really well at work today. Let me just turn my computer off for an hour.
No, I mean, I do feel sometimes I just want to take my brain off things and, like, I'm no woo-woo hippie, but I do believe in a bit of, like, you know, just trying to separate yourself from the narrative thoughts inside your brain and really just feel present. And, again, it ventures into the realm of woo-woo hippiness, which I hate. But on the topic of audiobooks, like, I'm a little bit obsessed with audiobooks. As Oki pointed out, they are a thing that you can do using your technology. I love listening to books. A bad narrator can screw up a book, but other than that, an audiobook is brilliant. And
yeah, and they don't interfere really with your life. You can carry on living your life.
It works well for fiction and nonfiction. I mean, I've probably read 100 more books in the last 3 years than I would have if I didn't listen to audiobooks, because I listen to it in traffic. I'm way behind on metal bands as a result, because that used to be my time for catching up music. But I mean, it's the best. I just wanted to mention earlier, you mentioned Casper De Vries and his dogs with the ABBA name that's not actually an ABBA name. I'm finishing book 4 of the Harry Potter series, because I've never read it and I've promised myself I'll read it, and I'm completely absorbed in it, and I'm doing it via audiobooks. I've brilliantly read the Audible versions, and I have never been able to stop thinking of Harry Potter as Harry Potter and Hermione as Harmony Niney, because of a skit that Casper De Vries did on the Casper Rasper show years ago.
I remember that. Harmony Niney.
His name is Harry Potter in my mind. Brilliant. And Harmony Niney is the female side.
Here's someone says, Gord, were you FHM's Captain Bear? I'll answer that. Yes, he was. Could you please gently suggest to Gord that he takes an occasional breath and allows someone else to speak? He's a little manic this morning.
I am a little manic. Apologies, friend.
All right. I sent Gareth an email, says someone else, on Thursday afternoon. It's one line and an attachment. I must admit it looks dodgy as hell, but I can assure you it's legit. On that note, do emails without signatures annoy you like most people I know? What's your email? Because if something looks dodgy, I just delete it straight away. Yesterday I got one of these, my name is Fern, and I'm the perfect girl for you. And then there's like, you just have to click through to this email address, and it's like somewhere in Russia.
You get a lot of those.
I do.
It's very strange.
And people with fake Facebook accounts where they're just like an absolute total belter.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, downloaded a picture of a real belter from the internet.
Right.
And then they got name, and they friend request you, and they have like one picture. You know it's sketchy when the person's like one picture on their Facebook.
Does Gord ever stop talking, says someone.
It's kind of what I'm what I'm here for.
Yeah, well,
I'll learn to take gaps.
Take a breath or two. That's funny. Welcome, Amanda. Okay. Nice to hear your voice again. So people are pleased to hear you. And Someone wants to know why we moved Justice. Well, he's away for the next 4 weeks on a Thursday, so we
thought, won't tell us where. You know, we're
he's
not
being
allowed
very
to
suspicious
know.
As usual. So we're just going to move it to Monday, and you know what? It's a great way to start your week too, because then you have things to talk about right off the get go, even if you didn't read the Sunday papers. Because who reads the Sunday papers? That you use them to clean up, like.
Well, if you've got a puppy or a kitten, yeah, you buy a newspaper.
That's why you buy the newspapers. Yeah.
Or
there's
you,
no other
or
reason.
You have birds in cages, but that's.
Or if you're going into Empress Palace, they give it to you for free.
So, yeah, we're going to speak to Toby. Is he on the line or is he coming in? Oh, he's coming in. Okay, well, that's good news, because I hate it when he's on the line. You can never hear him properly. Here's another one. Just wanted to say I love your show. This is from Raina. Even though I haven't met you guys, it feels like I know you all, and getting to listen to you every morning helps to relieve the massive stress of being at Cambridge. Huh. Depression can be very lonely at times, but knowing I have people who can make me feel closer to home and make me smile on a daily basis is great help. Please carry on what you're doing and don't ever stop, Raina. That's nice, huh? She's studying at Cambridge.
Yeah, that's hardcore.
I sent an email off to one of my heroes yesterday. I've been talking to his assistant for about a year and a half now to get him on the show as a guest, and yesterday I sent him an email and he replied like straight away, and so we will be having a conversation with Professor Richard Dawkins very soon. Yeah, which I'm very excited about. This guy is a master of evolutionary biology. He's written a ton of books that are just spectacular. He's most famous, obviously, for The God Delusion and The Selfish Gene, both of which were books that I would say were seminal in the way I've begun to understand the nature of matter, what's true, what parents put into their kids' heads while they're still soft. He's a very, very interesting human being.
And he's a huge influence on a lot of really other very interesting human beings.
Yes.
Stephen Fry, he's like...
Absolutely.
He's Ricky Gervais. These are people that constantly cite him as sources of inspiration and information.
I've got to ask him about one controversial thing that he's been involved in. He likes to refer to people he calls brights. He's like created this category of people. I don't know if he still believes it or not, but he believes that these people are superior thinkers, and that he's almost created this category for them which makes them better than other people. And I don't know whether I like that or not. He seems to think that they deserve a name and all that kind of thing. The minute people start talking like that, I get a little bit nervous.
Why?
Well, because you
Who
don't
gets
create
to decide.
Yeah, and you don't create a category of people and you call them stupid. So a category of bright people, but just bothers me a little bit.
I don't know.
I think it's an individual thing. You can't categorize this stuff.
I think people are doing that every day of their lives.
You think so?
I mean, that's why you have people that you look down on, or you have people that you look up to, is because in your mind, you've already created a distinction between those that you're better than and those that you respect. I think people do that all the time.
Something interesting about that. Apparently, they looked into... This is from Jordan Peterson, who's been a guest on the Renegade Report once or twice. Mm. He looked into lobster societies. Now, a lobster is a fairly rudimentary creature, right? You know, pretty small brain. So in lobster society, there is a hierarchy. And depending on how important you are in that hierarchy of being a lobster, you have different levels of serotonin. And that's also present in mammals. Which is
so
why
the
mammals,
more important you are, the more happy chemical your brain
yes,
makes.
Yes, correct.
Based on importance socially.
And this is the best argument against that stuff about the patriarchy and everything else, because lobster societies are chemically and evolutionarily biased towards a hierarchy.
I heard something kind of related where, because dogs have hierarchy and like in packs, dogs, wolves, etc.
All animals do.
But the ones
lobsters
that are
have it and we have it, everything in between has it.
The ones that are subservient like are very happy with their role. Like you go and do something like bottom rung in the dog society, you have to like butt sniff permanently because that's where you are. You don't get to make any decisions. They like whatever level they're on, they get a boost from just doing their job.
All right, well, Toby Shapshack is here. How are you, sir? It's nice to see you, Tobes. Hey, you brought
Good
your
morning.
Own, I'm so
I
glad
mean,
you brought your own headphones.
Well, you know, I thought that's what, you know, radio
it's
people
very professional.
No, it
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
It is.
Good morning.
Work. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thanks. What lovely
a good
traffic you have here in Rivonia.
Isn't it great? I know you said you'd be here at 5:30. Look at the time.
I'm
Toby Shapshak is the editor-in-chief and publisher of Stuff magazine. He is regularly cited in famous publications like Forbes. He's done TED Talks across the world. And he is our foremost expert, in my opinion, on all the gadgets and all the technology that you could possibly imagine. And he's married to a very, very talented and beautiful woman. Don't know how that happened.
Yes, yes. She's way too hot for me.
But you had a kid.
Indeed.
Last time we spoke to you on the show, I mean, I've spoken to you since then. But how's fatherhood treating you?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, I realize I'm a late bloomer in this field. But all those wonderful things people said about having kids is totally true. It is truly profoundly wonderful.
I had a lunch with you at the end of last year, and you actually were... I've never seen you so excited about anything. You said it's the best thing that's ever happened to you. And you explained to me why and how there's this little human being who's just the most fascinating gadget you've ever been involved with.
Well, what's interesting is watching someone's consciousness come online and how their brain starts to process things and what they do. I mean, the last week or two, he started crawling and watching him like work out how to use his legs, how to get his knees up, how to process it. We got him a couple of kittens, which of course is just a joy for everybody involved. But enough about me. Let's talk about you.
Okay, there are a couple of things I want to talk about. First of all, a lot of people are interested in what 2018 may bring. Certainly, Apple's been lacking in surprises lately. Samsung, they say that this S8's fantastic. Have you got anything to say about it?
Yeah, the S8 is a spectacular phone.
You like it?
Yeah, it was really great. It was our winning phone in the Gadget Awards at the end of last year. Really, really, really superb piece of technology. And it began this trend that we're seeing from everybody now, which is bezel-less phones. And what the bezel is just the black strips around the screen. And what's happened is phone manufacturers have been able to miniaturize the technology to such an extent that you don't need all that extra space. So, for instance, you know, the new iPhone 10 has a screen that's bigger than the 7 Plus, but is in a smaller frame, pretty much.
Someone said to me the other day, he's a phone manufacturer, and he told me that the number one thing people look for is still camera.
Yeah,
camera is like the biggest selling point for a phone.
And I think will be for a long time, actually, because it's what we do with the phones that makes the difference. And for most people, taking pictures is a key thing. And if you think about the power of a camera in a modern smartphone, not this year's model or last year's model is what we all were using, but let's just say the camera from 5 years ago, that is exponentially better than any camera anyone ever owned, unless they owned a very expensive DSLR.
That's right. Totally. Like, you used to have to be a professional photographer to get that level of quality, of
exactly.
HD quality.
And what's happened is the software around it, of course, has gotten so much better. So now, you know, with two lenses on the back of most of the high-end smartphones, you can do that really great portrait mode where the subject is blurred, is in focus, and the background is blurred.
It's beautiful. It's like a professional studio shot.
Yeah, that you always used a long lens for. You use a longer lens so that, you know, you have a very short field
of
focus.
Camera? Do you still have a camera?
Yes, I have two, actually.
Because you used to carry a camera around with you, and I was thinking the other day, maybe you've given that up.
No, you'll be surprised at how having a child makes you want to capture the moment. And I've used this. You agree with me?
Amanda
no,
agrees.
I do. My family's constantly carrying huge cameras around because there are tons of nieces and nephews. So yeah.
Well, huge. You know, I mean, the amazing shift in camera technology in the last 5 years or so is that instead of the much bigger DSLR, which is the digital single lens reflex, and what a single lens reflex did was it had a little mirror, so you looked through a viewfinder with a little L-shaped thing, like a reverse submarine periscope. So you looked through the viewfinder. So what you're seeing is what you will capture. That was a major breakthrough for camera technology, you know, 50 years ago. And as you push the picture, the mirror would flip up and expose the film and then click down. And that's where you get that distinctive click from. But what has happened since is you've got mirrorless cameras, these compact DSLRs. In fact, no one calls them compact anymore because it's the new standard. Yeah. So you can get these very tiny cameras. I have the Fuji It's the top camera in our top 10, the FXT20, and it is unbelievable, the picture quality, and it's as good as the very first. I bought the very first sub $1,000 DSLR when it came out. It was the Nikon D70, and it was truly extraordinary what you could do. And I, for a long time, I walked around with this camera and I took pictures and I did things. And what's great is that you look back and you've got all these wonderful photographs of all your friends' kids, a couple of my friends who've, you know, died from cancer. I've got great pictures of them. And because of the quality of the camera, you capture that moment just so much better. The quality of the image itself is profoundly good. So I do. I have a camera that I use. But
tell me about this Bank Zero thing. Because we've been talking a lot about cryptocurrencies and about how banking's on its way out. But then Bank Zero comes along. This is old Michael Jordan, who was pretty much the guy who started the innovation curve at FNB.
Yes, I'm sure he'd hate to hear you call him old Michael Jordan.
No. I'm still fresh and young. Sure, of course.
But the interesting thing is that he's actually said nothing. You know, I can't remember the last time, except for perhaps the Apple launch, that something got announced, certainly in South Africa, and there was so much excitement by it. You know, Capitec's been around for 20 years. They're a remarkable banking success. Yeah. But, you know, they probably didn't get a front page piece on Business Day when Michael Jordan said, we're coming out with an app-based bank. And that's pretty much all they've said. It's not going to be a commercial bank. They're not going to focus on lending you money. They're going to help you save money, and it's going to be app-based. And, of course, that's the future, isn't it? You can do these very specific services using the power of these smartphones. These smartphones are truly extraordinary. The statistic you always hear quoted is that the very first iPhone, so 10 years ago, that first iPhone, that had more power than the computer that landed humanity on the moon. Faster connection to the computer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and a camera. So, with these phones, it's totally obvious to us. We all use WhatsApp all the time, or iMessage, or Facebook Messenger. All of those things are familiar to us. They're how we use it. Why shouldn't our bank be some kind of app-based thing? And that's pretty much all we have. But it's enough to know that someone as smart and savvy as Michael Jordan, who understood this about 8 years ago when he was running FNB, and what he'd done is he'd made FNB a much more efficient organization and then launched a smartphone app in 2011. And we forget 2011, before that, no, you couldn't do your banking on a phone unless you logged in through the browser. Yeah. It was cumbersome. It was clunky.
It's like a level of escalation required before you even go browser. So it used to be like you had to go in the bank, you had to go into the bank and do anything, and any bank admin that needed doing was like a prison sentence. Then it became possible to do a lot of it via the internet using your desktop machine, and now it's like on those rare functions where the app doesn't cover it, you're like, okay, I must go sit at my computer and log in.
Yeah.
Like it becomes a new level of schlep every time they improve.
Schlep.
Yeah, it becomes a new level of schlep they improve.
Speaking of schlepping, I've been reading a lot of the stuff that you've written, and you called 2017 the year of state media capture. Social media capture.
And that's, I mean, you just see more of it. I mean, in the last 2 weeks.
These Gupta bots are everywhere, right?
But they're not the only ones. I mean, Twitter's announced there were a whole, I think it was 50,000 more Russian internet trolls they weren't aware of. Mark Zuckerberg does an annual announcement. He's kind of New Year's resolution. And this year it was he's going to fix Facebook. And the way they were going to fix Facebook was basically to admit that they couldn't get on top of news, and they're going to drop news, and they're going to beef up or bump up personal updates, which is, you know, as I told you when we had lunch last year, that was the reason I stopped using Facebook.
Yeah.
And I deleted the app off my phone because I didn't want to get these constant updates about things that weren't relevant to me. And Facebook, like all apps, I mean, I talk about Facebook, but all apps do this. Notifications used to be a wonderful way of alerting you to something.
It was exciting as hell.
You told me last year when we had lunch, switch off your notifications, your life will improve. And it was brilliant advice. Yes, tightly. I did. No Twitter, no Facebook, no Instagram notifications.
Great.
Life is so much better.
And you can hone that quite clearly. So I do need to see Twitter direct messages, for instance, or specific, in your email app, you can specify whose messages pop up on your screen and whose doesn't, you know. So I've worked with that kind of thing. But, you know, Facebook first, Mark Zuckerberg said, we're going to fix it. Then he came out a week later and said, we are going to give you news, but it's going to be high quality news. And then another product manager this very week came out and said, they've realized they could have done more. It was a new problem they'd never seen. They could have done more. And they've been horrified at how it's been able to corrode democracy. That was his corrode democracy. So, and that's what's happened. People with very narrow interests have been able to usurp the best intentions of social media. Social media created in a democracy by well-meaning people who want to do the best, you know, or tell you what they had for lunch or who they're hanging out with or, you know, just...
other boring stuff.
Yeah.
It's been turned into a tool for propaganda.
Exactly.
Unvetted as well. There's no, but the problem, another issue with that, if I'm not mistaken, is that like now if you start vetting news, it's in someone's hands to decide what you should.
You're choosing a sensor.
So Facebook has always said it's not a media company, despite doing exactly that.
Yeah.
You know, so they're hiring another 10,000 people.
Well, I heard Google's got like 100,000 agencies that it uses to demonetize stuff that they don't want monetized on YouTube.
Yeah.
For example.
I don't know about that figure, but YouTube, I mean, I was just thinking about this last night and thinking about the column I'm going to write for the FM next week, which is everybody forgets just how huge YouTube is and what the problems with YouTube are. I mean, the kind of stuff that you can see on YouTube that children shouldn't see.
Yeah, you could watch Al-Qaeda videos.
You know, beheadings, abuses, you know, whenever someone films school bullying, where do you think it ends up? You know, where does all the stuff happen? And this is what's gone wrong with
social
media.
About everything that happens on the East Rand, Amanda puts up on YouTube.
Duck bullying. There's duck bullying videos on. There's others. So you can join that community, Amanda.
Well, there you go. You know, the East Rand's good for something.
You and I are both huge Star Wars fans. What did you think of The Last Jedi?
I don't know if I'm ever going to be invited back on the show. Then I have to admit I still haven't seen it.
What?
Oh. Well,
what?
You know, it's, I was
are you kidding me?
Yeah, January 24th.
How do
Toby?
You get when? And, yeah, how does it get to this?
How
well,
does
you know? There's like the multiple things. You know, I didn't want to do it over December because I was hanging out with my wife and stuff.
What?
And I've been promising to go with my 11-year-old goddaughter.
I'm horrified. Well,
spoiler: if you're ever going to like slow play one, it was this one.
Yes. So, what can I say? At least R2-D2 is on the front cover of this month.
Yeah, I see
Stuff
lots of
magazine.
Star Wars in your magazine.
That is the Star
How's
Wars
that? You
issue?
Get a Darth Vader toaster. Everybody.
Yeah, it's great.
At that.
Oh wow.
This little R2-D2 robot, let me tell you, is probably one of the best toys I've seen in years.
What is
know?
It like? It's a proper droid.
I should have brought it in with me. I'll bring it in next time. It's about 10 centimeters high.
Yeah?
It's a proper controllable functional robot made by Sphero. Those guys
I remember the first
Sphero.
I had one, and I used to use my phone to direct it around.
Exactly.
And the dog would go crazy.
Yeah,
that
dogs,
was the little
cats,
round bum
yeah,
guy.
Round
what
one.
Was his name?
Well, so the first Sphero was that, and then they made the new BB-8, which
BB-8,
is the
guy.
Star Wars. I may not have seen the latest movie, but I do know all the slang. You even get an X-wing drone, you know.
Oh, wow.
That's very cool.
No
you get
way.
You get drones.
Does it fly?
It does. You get drones shaped like the Millennium Falcon. They
no,
do
no.
fly. It's all very cool. And for you know, my whole lifetime, you've watched people build these R2-D2 robots. That cost. I remember the first one cost 100,000 yen.
Yeah.
This is a 3,000 rand remote control robot. You can use your smartphone, and it absolutely rocks, and it works really perfectly.
What does it do aside from move around? I mean, obviously you can.
Oh, it's
guide
quite
it.
Clever. It's got a whole bunch of pre-programmed noises from the movies and actions, and you can let it patrol, and it'll you know map out the room and work out where it is. If you want to watch the movie with the drone, it will make all sorts of noises at the appropriate time. I'm saving all of this for my 11-year-old goddaughter.
Okay, I cannot believe you haven't seen it yet.
A quick question, #no spoilers. Was BB-8 in this new one?
Yeah.
Was?
Yeah.
They.
It was in it. All right, I need to know some other things. Everybody gets very excited every year. They're like, what's going to be the breakthrough thing? Everybody's talking about AI and how that's going to start impacting on ordinary daily life in a much more important way. Are you excited by any of this, or does it sound like more of the same? Because if you've been on these trend trains yes. for a while, you start to realize there's a lot of repetition, right?
Well, what happens is they're incremental upgrades of what you've had before, and it happens every year. It's the same thing. You know, someone gushingly asked me a couple of years ago, what's the new phone going to look like? Doesn't matter which phone it is. And I jokingly said, it's going to be thinner, it's going to be lighter, and it's going to have a bigger camera. And that's
exactly what happened.
And that's what happens. And it's now I call that Shapshak's first law of cell phone upgrades. And Shapshak's second law of cell phone upgrade is it's going to be thinner, lighter, have a bigger camera, and a bigger screen.
Yeah.
You know, and worse battery life. So, you know, that's what kind of happens. So what we're going to see this year is a continuation of what we saw last year, which is AI is a big thing. It's not really artificial intelligence yet. Technically, it's still called machine learning. And what we're going to see is a significant upgrade of a bunch of that stuff. The way we experience it as consumers, well, most consumers, we don't really get them in South Africa, is Amazon's Alexa, which comes in a whole bunch of Echo speakers. So you say, hey, Alexa, you know, tune me into the Gareth Cliff show.
Is it true that Alexa is always listening?
Exactly. That's the reason I don't have it. There are major, major security concerns. Everything that you say.
Do you have recorded. Hey? If I just Hey Siri, is that on your phone?
No, I've even turned Siri down.
I don't
down.
Have that. Yeah, also.
So Siri, I can very specifically push the button. It's not listening to everything. And people often say to me, oh, you're being paranoid. I've got nothing to hide.
You close the camera on your laptop?
Yes.
You put a piece of paper.
All of those things. I mean, like people think I'm crazy and paranoid and I'm overzealous with my privacy. I won't keep a scan of my passport or my ID number on my laptop or my phone. You should not be doing that.
Okay.
I've only just met you and already I'm looking down on you.
Yeah, sorry.
Should you have it in the cloud?
Look, if you're going to have it digitally, it's going to be stolen. Full stop. That's how it works. There's secure and safe ways to look after it. Then people go, email me your ID number. And I go, why? You know, and generally a travel agent says, please send me a scan of your passport. The reason they want your scan of your passport is to spell your name right. I've done extensive research with everybody
really?
Who's ever
so
asked
true,
me.
Though, because when they get it wrong, those new tickets, yeah, they pay.
Exactly.
They cough hard.
So, and then they say, I can't book your flight unless you give me your ID number. And I go, I won't. So I have never done that.
Really?
I'm pathological. It's never impeded my travel in any way whatsoever. Huh. So as soon as that stuff is available.
You must be a delight to these people new on the job.
Yeah. At some point, you must have to hand it over. I mean,
I start by apologizing, Ben. I go, I'm really sorry. I know I sound like a crazy person. I know I do, but believe me, you should be doing the same. And then, of course, Master Deeds happens, this big leak with all of our detail or WannaCry or any of the other major security things happen. And then I don't look like, you know, quite as crazy as, you know, Gareth Cliff after a gym session. I look like, you know, like a normal person. And that's the kind of level of security people need to have about their privacy. And they just don't.
We
maybe go,
not,
I've got nothing
sir,
to
we're
hide.
Not vigilant
go,
enough.
You're crazy. You do. Your identity has value. You people sell your passport. If they've got your passport and your credit card number, that's even more value. You know, so
what about
you
those apps that store
it.
All of that stuff?
Well, you can use different apps. You can use different things. If you want to have proper passwords, I say this to people all the time, get a password management app. It's the simplest thing you can do. They're free. One password or LastPass. That's what people should be using. I have insanely complicated passwords that you know I can barely remember. But you have, as long as you have the master password, and what you must do is write it down. You know, people go, oh, I mustn't write it down. Put it on a post-it pad and put it somewhere secure. You know, don't stick it on the fridge. You know, I mean, put it in a plastic packet and, you know, press stick it to the underside of the toilet if you have to, you know, the toilet system so that it's safe and secure. But you can write stuff like this down. Never, ever use the same password for more than one website. Don't use a word from a dictionary. Don't use obvious things. Don't use the name of your pet or your kid. I mean, it's for this reason that my next pet will be a Scotty called Password. and just be start to think like a Tutsi, because basically that's how everybody else does.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, my God, I've got to go and do some patching up and changing of stuff.
Can you actually book a plane flight without a plane flight as opposed to a hot air balloon flight? Can you actually book a plane ticket without at some point handing them your ID number? Isn't it something no, so, they have to
so,
have?
No, so what you have to you don't have to do that for a local flight, but an international flight, when you check in, then the system wants your a passport and your visa number, etc. Yeah. Now, that's a secure way to do it. You have a secure connection from in an app or in a browser, then you enter the system directly into their system, and the system saves it in a secure way. We hope a secure way. We can't really do anything about that. And I was flying back from Nigeria last year, and SAA had this scanner in the airport, which was basically an Android phone, and they took a photograph of everybody's passport. And I just refused to let them do it. I'm like, you must be mad. That's an Android phone. People put soft malware on an Android phone. Someone could write an app that, or a piece of code that sent every photograph to a server, and they would never know. It's also insecure. It's just a phone without a password. I often come across people who don't have a PIN code or a password or a fingerprint on their phone, and they go, it's too much hassle. Well, it isn't. If you lose your phone and someone has access to your SMSs and your email, and they can change your bank password, they can change anything of yours.
Sure.
Generally, people verify it with an SMS or an email, and it's a huge potential disaster for you if that happens. So there is no excuse for not having a password.
Did you get anything really cool for Christmas, gadget-wise?
Yes, yes.
Because what you must be impossible to buy stuff for, because you can get everything you want.
Well, I don't really I don't think people buy me technology. I mean I certainly don't, and I have a policy of never talking about my personal life, so I can't tell you about the utterly amazing Gregor Jenkin table my wife is going to buy. We're still in the process of getting it. No one buys me technology. I mean, people always say, what do you want? And I say whiskey or exclusive books vouchers, and I go to exclusive books and I buy like really great, let's say, coffee table books, because all the literature I read now I read on a Kindle.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer.
I can't do that, hey. I know it's a no-brainer, but I love a book.
You see, I'm the same about a
but
newspaper.
But you travel a lot.
I'm not sentimental about books, but I am about newsprint. So I read vociferously, but I read it all on my Kindle. And what I like about the Kindle, from the earliest days that I could hack it, and now it's built in with a backlit, is I have been waking up at 3 a.m. most of my life to turn the light off, you know. So the great thing about the Kindle is when you fall asleep, it turns itself off.
That's beautiful.
Sorry, I got one more question. I know we're struggling for time.
No, go on.
You use the iPhone.
Yes.
Now, you just said about an Android phone not being secure.
Yes.
Would you always use an iPhone because of that, regardless of how good a Samsung is or whatever it is?
Admit it. You're just trapped in the ecosystem.
No, I am Steve Jobs' bitch. I don't mind admitting it.
Me too.
But for several reasons. Firstly, Ben, yes, security is a major issue. I did a lot of research about Android, and it happened when BBM came out as an app, and I went on Android. It was available on Android first. I always have a Windows phone and an Android phone, and I downloaded what the Google Play Store said was BBM. I downloaded several versions, all of which were malware, and they want access to your contacts, your camera, your location, your kind, blah, blah, blah. And then I went and did some research, and this is, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. At the time, one of the security companies, Trend Micro, said there were 300,000 malware apps in the Google Play Store. So now Google makes me jump through a whole bunch of hoops when it registers my credit card, make sure that I do a whole bunch of security checks.
But they don't check these apps.
Exactly. Apple's completely different. Apple is much more security conscious for different reasons. They have prioritized customer experience. They don't want people to have a bad experience. They want people to be happy and faithful because you give them their credit card to buy things from the iTunes store or the App Store. So that's a real issue for me.
Yeah.
And I'm very glad that I've stuck with it. And what's come out in the last year, or the end of last year, was that Android continues to track you even when you tell it not to. And when you do a factory reset, it carries on tracking you. Now, that is very, very terrifying in terms of privacy. show we've got nothing to hide. You know, I don't slip off to the ice cream stall, you know, and eat a tub of ice cream when I should be at the gym. You know, I don't know. Like, I joked with someone once, is fast food the new infidelity? You know, do people pop into a Steers for a burger, when they're telling their spouse they should be like, you know, not eating carbs. But the other thing that I do is I cut and paste text a lot. I write on my phone. I do stuff. And iOS has nailed that in a way that I don't feel Android has. And I'm much more comfortable with it than I am with Android. So from a pragmatic point of view, the thing I do most on the phone is easy on iOS. But I use the Android phone because it's what 90% of the world is using. And you can't be some ivory tower journalist who doesn't muck it in with the masses. So I want to know what everyone else's experience is. It's just I prefer the experience on my iPhone. And I, of course, you're stuck in the ecosystem, aren't you? I don't know how many hundreds of dollars I've spent on apps. You know, I'm not going to buy those all again, am I?
Toby Shapshack, it's always nice to see you. Thanks for popping by, man. And I hope we'll catch up with you a couple more times this year.
Thank you for exposing me to this. Thank you for exposing me to this glorious Rivonia traffic.
Yeah. Everybody has to pay their price. Amanda, good to have you visit today.
Thanks for having
me. Gord, always nice to have you pop in.
Thanks, dudes.
Thank you to Mubs. Thank you to Ben. Thank you to Sia. And most especially to you. Let's wrap it up with a little news for this morning. Here's the stuff that you really need to know. Capetonians are officially over the water crisis. In the beginning, it was cool to talk about and made the place even more trendy and interesting. But now, it has become so mainstream, it's just annoying and uncool.
See what you did there.
Lynn Brown says she will not go down without a fight. She said this, of course, at work. At home, it's a different story. And finally, Mark Fish just woke up. And eager to save face after the Hugh Masekela tweet error yesterday, he has changed to a profile pic of Barack Obama. He says the pic of Obama is from when he won the Rugby World Cup in 1995, playing a Sterling match on the left wing. Great. All right, we will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9. Coming up, Aubrey Malden, who's an advertising executive. He was shaped and molded in that industry. He lived a life on the cutting edge of creativity. He was fired by David Ogilvy himself. He worked with Royals. He's encapsulated everything in a new book, which he shared with us. Here he is, Aubrey Malden. CliffCentral.com. Great lineup today. Wednesday. Lots of good stuff to look forward.
This is CliffCentral.com.